A new study published today has found that members of the queer community are twice as likely to experience depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts as their straight peers. The University of Otago study was led by Dr. Janet Spittlehouse, and she joins me on the line now. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you. Where did you start with this? Where did you get your information from?
Well, we've got a birth cohort here in Christchurch that we recruited when they were born in 1977. And we've been following those people, which is just over 1,000 people, for the last 40 years.
Yeah, not to be confused with the Dunedin study, but a similar sort of thing?
Yes, quite right, yeah.
And what did you set out to find when you surveyed these 1,000 people?
Well, we've asked many questions over the years. We've seen the cohort on 24 occasions, but for this specific study, I wanted to look at mental health rates in sexual minorities. Although there has been quite a lot of research about that done over the last 20 years, that research has quite a few methodological difficulties which I felt that we could overcome with our birth cohort. For example, a lot of the research only uses one measure of sexuality, which is often identity, which tends to underestimate rates of same-sex or both-sex sexual orientation. The other problem is that often the samples that are researched are not very representative, and ours is a community sample. And with mental health, it's known that there's a lot of childhood factors that are associated with mental health problems, such as depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideation. And we wanted to see if sexual minorities still had those problems after we'd accounted for those childhood variables.
So one of the interesting things you did was to sort these people into categories, to put it bluntly. And which categories did you come up with?
Well, we used the information that we collected over 17 years, and we saw our group five times during that period. And we asked them about their sexual identity, their sexual behaviour, their sexual attraction, and their sexual fantasies. And we used all of that information to group people. And we found four very distinct groups. The main group, the largest group, was the heterosexual group, and that was 82% of the cohort. The next largest group is the mostly heterosexual group, and that's about 12.5%. Bisexual is made up about 3.5%, and the gay and lesbian group was about 2%.
That second group's an interesting one, mostly heterosexual.
Yes, it is an interesting one, and it's known to be the largest sexual minority group. And that group, for example, 50% of those people have reported that they have had a same-sex experience at some point between 18 and 35 years of age. 15% of them have had a same-sex relationship, and 50% of them reported having same-sex or both-sex sexual fantasies.
And I know this wasn't the purpose of your research, but it does raise some interesting questions about how we talk about sexuality, right? I was going to ask you when this interview started how many people are straight and how many people are gay, but it's not really that simple, according to your research.
No, it's quite complicated, and you'll get different results from the research because some people base it on identity, some people base it on behaviour. But I think what these four groups show is that sexuality lies on a spectrum, going from 100% heterosexual to 100% gay or lesbian.
And so what did you discover about the coincidence of gayness and mental health struggles?
Well, we found that in the sexual minorities overall, they were twice as likely to report anxiety, depression, or suicidal ideation. For example, the bisexual group were twice as likely to report depression over that time period. For anxiety, the gay and lesbian group were nearly three times more likely to report anxiety symptoms, and perhaps rather shockingly, for suicidal ideation, which is thoughts about suicide, but it's separate to suicide attempts, bisexual people were five times more likely to have those kind of thoughts, and gay and lesbian people were four times as likely to have those thoughts compared to heterosexual.
So what's going on here, Janet?
Well, it's... The main theory is that these problems are down to what's called minority stress, and that's high levels of stress because of association with a minority or a stigmatized group. In this case, it's sexual minorities, but it could equally be a racial minority or a disabled minority. And minority stress can come from outside, so from prejudice, discrimination and rejection from people, or it can come internally, causing stress by hiding your sexuality, being anxious about prejudice and internalized homophobia. We didn't actually measure minority stress in our group, but we're assuming that the poorer mental health rates are down to minority stress.
Possibly, sadly, unsurprising, these results, Janet?
No, it's not surprising. And like I say, other research has shown this, but we're the first to have the rich data available to group people into the four groups that we found. And to show that those mental health problems carry on from the age of 18 to 35.
And now these people are what, 42? So,
yes. They're 42. We saw them when they were 40 years old, but that data isn't yet available.
Oh, okay. Any special considerations then as we think about the mental health of these people as they head into middle age?
Well, I think it's the same considerations as for any other age, really. I guess ways to reduce minority stress is the way to help with sexual minorities' mental and physical health, for that matter. So increasing tolerance for sexual minorities through education, and perhaps more important from my point of view, is that we actually collect good quality, accurate data on sexuality. Unfortunately, here in New Zealand, we're a little bit behind with including sexuality questions on our main surveys. For example, the recent census did not have a sexuality question. So it's quite difficult to get funding and to target services when you actually don't know how many people in the country are part of a sexual minority.
Would you be keen on having these sorts of questions in the census?
Yes, they did look at including it in the last census, but they didn't seem to be able to get the data that was good quality. But I'm hoping that in the next census it will be included. And it has been included recently in the General Social Survey, that's run mm-hmm. by Stats New Zealand, and also in the New Zealand Health Survey in the 2015-2016. So hopefully we'll be getting some data through that will give us a more accurate picture.
No small thing, by the way, you showing up at my house, Janet, and asking me about my sexual history and preferences and experiences. Are people reluctant or have they been generally quite happy to be open, knowing, you know, how private the information will be?
Well, we have a group of participants, Jesse, who very generously have given their time, like I said before, on 24 occasions over their lifetime. So they're very used to us knocking on their door and asking them lots of personal questions. But I think that's probably the problem with the census, in that some people may have found those questions unpalatable.
Interesting stuff, eh? And as I say, some of it so not necessarily what you went out looking for, but I find it interesting. For example, the fact that when you looked at membership of these sort of sexual minorities, I think you call them, more likely to be women than men.
Yes, and that's found all over the world. I don't think the research hasn't really explained why that is, but one theory is that men's sexuality is much more hardwired, biologically hardwired, than it is for women. So women are far more flexible in their sexuality. So they may have heterosexual relationships, and sometimes they may have same-sex relationships, far more than men. 25% of women of our group were in the sexual minority groups, compared to only 9% of men.
Hey, good work. Nice to chat to you, and thanks for explaining your research to us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
That's Dr. Janet Spittlehouse from University of Otago, Christchurch, on our slightly ropey Wellington studio line. Apologies for that.